By Nelson?
One of them's on the south fringe of Fry Creek Canyon up in North Coney Lake. And the other one
Fry Creek Canyon? They already logged all up there.
No.
Or they used it as a access, didn't they? Fry Creek? Or there was a burn up there?
There was some private logging done in Johnson's Landing, right next to Fry Creek. And I'm talking about the portion of Fry Creek that's private property owned by the church in Vancouver, the mouth of Fry Creek.
Okay.
And it's just a little bit south of that, just off of the private property. There's a known staked uranium claim. Also, there's one just south of Choate Lake. And Choate Lake is in the Nelson Crescent Riding. The price of uranium has more than tripled in the last 3 years on the open market. There's a huge, intense focus on finding uranium currently. And the reason for this is because it's supported under the Kyoto Protocol as a type of green energy, believe it or not.
Oh my goodness.
Nuclear power plants. And the reason for that is because it doesn't give off any carbon dioxide. It's really strange.
It doesn't give off soot, but you'll die of radioactivity. How sweet.
Exactly.
I can't believe it.
It's amazing how many different issues there are in British Columbia right now that aren't even on the radar screen. And there's so many of them that the people that stay on top of this, they can't even stay on top of it. That's how bad it is.
Just too much. Treading water. More than treading water.
Yep. And I should plug my website again if you do want to find out more about me and what my interests are, what I'm standing on, what I'm raising awareness about. Please go to www.kootenaygreen.ca. I have all my contact information up there. You can call me, you can email me, fax me, whatever, and I will get back to you.
Right on. It's been so great having you in the studio. I've been speaking with Luke Crawford, the Green Party candidate for this area. The vote is on
May 17th.
And
all day.
All day.
And if you're working, you can get paid to go vote.
Yeah.
Just call me to find out how.
Okay, now, if you're CRTC or one of the station managers, I don't know anything about these political rules. So I tell you what, I'll ask every candidate to come into the studio and talk about their psychedelic drug experiences. And if they come, they come. And if they don't, tough luck. Okay, that'll fulfill my non-biased political reporting on the radio show. Luke, it's been great having you here.
Thanks a lot, Dustin.
And go get them. Like, we've got a good rep here for the Green Party. Let's go for it.
Right on.
Stay tuned for more. Here we go. This is Woody Allen.
I have never in my life had difficulty with the cops. I had difficulty with the cops. It's not. No, actually, I didn't have difficulty with the cops. I was once sitting home in my house, and a lot of cars pulled up around the house. They shined in searchlights. And I heard a voice over a loudspeaker say, "We have your house surrounded. This is the New York Public Library." They wanted the books back, you know. And the little librarian was lobbing grenades over the house. Came out with my hands up, you know, kicking the book ahead of me. They took me down to the main branch on Fifth Avenue in New York, and they took away my glasses for a year. And I was thinking, when I lived in my apartment in the brownstone building in New York, we were constantly getting robbed all the time. It was a very big feature of the neighborhood, you know. Guys would break in and steal, and my apartment was robbed about 4 times in 2 years. You know, it really got to be a bad thing. And I didn't know what to do about it. So finally I put on my door a little blue and white sticker that said, "We gave." Figured that would end it brilliantly, you know, but it didn't, because a man in my building, Mr. Russo, was held up late at night. Two very big guys got him with a bottle and a stick in the lobby, you know, and they wanted all his cash. And Russo, like a jerk, tried to sign for it for tax purposes, whatever it is, you know. They hit him a tremendous shot across the frontal lobe, you know, real smack in the head, and he fell to the lobby in a fetal position, you know. He lay there until his lease ran out, you know. He's never been the same since the smack in the head, you know. He smiles a lot now. He laughs out of context occasionally. You know? It's not as perceptive as the average tree stump, you know. And everybody in the building panicked. They said that I'm small and I should go and build myself up. In case I get into trouble, I could defend myself. So I went to Vic Tanny's. This was a long time ago. I went for 3 weeks. And I lifted and I bent and I squatted. Nothing happened to me at all. You know, nothing grew or anything. And I figured it's ridiculous. Why don't I forget about it and give Vic Tanny the cash and ask him if he'll walk me home nights, okay? However, there is a kid in my building, a little odd kid named Leon. And Leon takes karate lessons. And Leon is always walking around with his hand cocked at a right angle like this, you know? And everyone said that I should learn judo because I'd be an animal. If I knew it. But judo to me has always been a thing of the bigger your opponent is, the bigger the beating he's going to give you. And then my good friends told me in the back of Esquire magazine, you can send away for a fountain pen that shoots tear gas. It's a real fountain pen and it secretes a gaseous billow, you know, a really great pen, $7.50. I send away, comes in the mail 2 weeks later in a plain brown wrapper, you know. I unscrew it, I put in the tear gas cartridges, and I clip it in my breast pocket, you know, and I go out. A long time ago this was, some friends in my neighborhood had a surprise autopsy, and I'm invited for the evening, you know? I'm coming home by myself, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's pitch black, and I'm all alone, and standing in my lobby is a Neanderthal man. With the eyebrow ridges, you know, and the hairy knuckles like this, you know. He had just learned to walk erect that morning, I think. Came right to my house in search of the secret of fire, you know. A tree swinger in the lobby at 2 o'clock in the morning. A mouth breather looking at me like, you know. I took my watch out and I dangled it in front of him, you know, because they're mollified by shiny objects sometimes. He ate it. It's really under pressure, and I backed off and I pulled out my tear gas pen and I pressed the trigger and some ink trickled on my shirt, you know. I made a mental note to call Esquire and tell them, because I'm standing in the lobby 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, with the product of a broken home, you know. I had a fountain pen in my hand there. I tried writing on him with it, you know. He came for me and he started to tap dance on my windpipe. So very quickly I lapsed into the old Navajo Indian trick of screaming and begging. I get into an amazing amount of physical encounters for someone my size. I really, about 13 weeks ago, I had my shoe shined against my will. Tremendous shoe shine, boy. He said to me, "I'm shining your shoes." "Yes, you are," I said. He did give me an excellent shine, I might add, but they were suede shoes, and I...
Welcome back. This is Vane of the Cosmos, and we just had Luke Crawford in from the Green Party. Wow, finally. Like, honestly, you talk to some politicians, it's just like, it's more about politics than actually the person with the heart behind it. And anyway, I'm just happy to meet someone like Luke and know that they're running for the Green Party. As I said, for political fairness and equality for all politicians, I will be calling up everybody and asking them if they want to relay their favorite psychedelic story on air. Blair, that mushroom trip you did in 1969, we want to hear about it. Corky Evans, that time you took peyote in the desert, we want to know. I guess that's it, hey? That's all the candidates are. Well, anyway, we'll find out if they're going to call in. That's for sure. Now, this is a letter that I read online, and it was like a, you know, carbon copy, like, thought you might like this. Thought I might like it. Holy, it's an amazing, amazing letter, and it covers a lot of how I feel, really. It's like documents my brain, kind of. So this is a letter, and I'll just read it, and at the end I'll tell you who it is, maybe. Hello. You may be interested in the entheogenic-related contents of a message I sent to Ron Holt. In response to his strongly discouraging someone, a Merkaba meditator, from using ecstasy and other drugs. I only have Ron's piece hard copy, and it's a couple of pages worth that it's way too nice of a day to type out. But if you should like to see it, I will gladly provide a copy. Here it is. Dear Ron, I recently took a Flower of Life workshop and have been reading the workbook provided with great interest. Something I am compelled to address is your message to the person who wondered why the FOL organization opposes the use of drugs. First, I'd like to acknowledge the semantics of language and the mind's tendency to get caught up in its limitations. For example, the term drug is very weighted by negative contemporary cultural associations for specific reasons and generally implies avoidance or escapism in an unhealthy and destructive way on some level or levels. The specific reasons mentioned above are to an extent ironic in that they include, but are not limited to, that's another message in itself, they're facilitating the powers that be to keep their subjects' attention trained on the world of illusion, which is manipulated at their expense, i.e. populations are more controllable when distracted and minimally aware of the universe within. Entheogen is another term which encompasses the realm of chemical and plant-derived psychoactive substances with high regard for their traditional shamanic uses and constructs them as catalysts for revealing what already exists. In other words, entheogen denotes a context of responsible engaging rather than escapism and disengaging as taking drugs does. Entheogen implies an experience within, not something that happens outside of oneself, with a substance as a vehicle for getting there. For further definition, you can go to www.entheogenesis.ca. In your message about ecstasy and other drugs, you stress the importance of using psychoactive tools consciously, carefully, and with respect and sacred intentions, as indigenous cultures do and have done. I wholeheartedly agree. But my impression was by the comparison presented that you perceive the use of entheogens in traditional indigenous ceremonies for the purpose of identifying, going deeper into, and moving through the blocks challenging areas of consciousness as esoteric rather than common. On a personal note, where this matter of association is concerned, I was raised believing all of the anti-drug propaganda that is pervasive through our North American culture, including the depiction of totally unmotivated, loser cannabis users referred to as potheads in the nonsense drug war propaganda film showed to us in grade school. At the same time, I found the party experience with its associated use and frequently abuse of alcohol deeply unsatisfying and largely something to avoid. I'm now close to 40 years old, and it's only been recently that I've grown to appreciate the likes of fine wine as art forms, and have employed entheogens, preferably plant-derived but not necessarily, as tools for intentionally exploring and working with my consciousness. Like not getting a credit card until a heightened maturity about its potential use and misuse is present, my experience with entheogens is similar to their traditional role in indigenous cultures. I use entheogens rarely, relative as that is, with significant care and always at the right time. When one employs any tool in a sacred manner or not, the manifestation is reflected of the intention. I do not see any difference between the use of psychoactive substances that I perceive as purposeful middle world gifts from the medicine chest of Mother Earth and Father Sky, and the assortment of other tools that we consciously use in our creative processes in the general dimension. By the latter, I mean such portals as yoga, martial arts, meditation, chanting, breathwork, the internet, tarot, channeling, feng shui, astrology, numerology, body piercing, tattooing, dancing, religion, playing music, transportation, aromatherapy, crystals, full spectrum lighting, massage, bodywork, praying, organic vegan diets, gardening, everything almost. Essentially, that I'm talking about anything and everything in the context that it is all an interplay of energy and light. As an example of the intentional synergistic interplay of many of the above tools, there's been an explosion of rave culture, which has birthed incredible collective exercises of human ingenuity and co-creativity. Kids today are naturally coming together with their myriad of talents to manifest multi-dimensional, holistic experiences on a regular basis. From global DJs interpreting and weaving everything from whale sounds to inner-city beatboxing, to artists painting, postering, and making websites, to fire spinning, skateboarding, lantern and art bike making, to vegan, organic, wholesome food providing and yoga facilitating, to construction of mind-blowing stages and lighting by alternative energy sources, to the list goes on and on, and for what is present as a whole. What's more, the youthful coordinators instinctively speak the language of unity and have the skills to humbly facilitate and maintain focus on something greater that makes the event happen. These are tribal gatherings in every sense of the word, and none fools him or herself for long that he or she is an observer rather than a participant. No matter what his or her inherent piece of the puzzle, it is assumed welcome, is encouraged, and consequently revealed by osmosis. At their most basic element, such spaces and places are being established as conducive ground for people to purposefully show up. In my more judgmental initial view of raves and their associated culture, I had reduced them to being a reaction to the oppressive dominator political and social paradigm. While that is still true in a sense, I explored and expanded my negative perceptions, and yet now view these gatherings as a creation in their own right, where the indigo, crystal, et al. Children come out to express their instinctive abilities in ways they are otherwise provided little societal outlet for. And yes, entheogens are an option aspect of the total experience. The reason is because they add yet another dimension to these already amplified happenings. Interestingly, there is most always stipulation on rave posters and tickets that no alcohol is permitted, because the organizers recognize the difference between the tools I am addressing and their potential effects on the group experience. Co-creators often orchestrate precisely what entheogens are to be present and available at their event, given their intent of the happening. Here are links to a couple of the popular rave-type gatherings, though they're only a sampling of many thousands going on worldwide each year. These events are a major phenomenon, to be sure, and if we pay attention, they are revealing an aspect of our evolution that is bound to weave itself into the very fabric of our social and political consciousness. www.shambhalamusicfestival.com and www.evolvefestival.com. I live in Nelson, BC, home of the Shambhala Music Festival. I resisted going for years, but my family, everyone I love, youngsters and oldsters alike, were all so obviously deeply touched by what happens at this annual event. Finally, I went. And it took until the third try, believe me, I had some work to do, for me to dissolve my resistance and really be comfortable and come to understand in a way that can only be relayed in heart space how such a gathering can, by the co-creativity, unity, and community it generates, strengthen and sustain people's essence in their everyday realities and beyond throughout the year. In Nelson, the young man who generated the idea to host Shambhala on his family farm, which is another whole interesting story, was recognized as having the most successful business of the year in the region for 2004. I sometimes take for granted the connectedness of our community here, especially when I see people from more experienced little of prior to being at Shambhala and not wanting for it to be over. Yet we all recognize it must be so, because it's as ever-changing and temporal as life is itself, and comes down to opening a door within, after all. So none of the means are ends in themselves, but they are merely conducive to the reflecting aspects of the same experience of that which we term God. Though the human mind persists in trying to harness the infinite by projecting its longing for divine union on and by a variety of so-called tools, something so abstract to our manner of perceiving cannot be translated in entirety by any one of them. for as long as the space-time continuum is sustained. As Amma puts it, to attempt to do so would be like trying to describe sugar without using the word sweet. Essentially, my present muse is not so much about discerning the relative value of the tools as anticipating when we give up the toolbox itself. And for my best guess about the person who posed the ecstasy question, though it's none of my business and just for fun, he's still engaging, or will be similarly, after finding his resolve. Shanti. And that was Jade Geeson. And, man, it just sums it right up. I'm so... It just, like, nailed it right on the head for me. And this is, yeah, this is amazing. And that's, I had the same experience. That's why I'm kind of, I'm feeling like someone's writing my mind here. I thought Shambhala was just a freak show. And I thought that it was, like, lowball stimulation and just out people out for kicks and that kind of thing. But I realize now that, and I realized through going to it and experiencing it that no, that space that we create together as a community, as a clan, as a tribe, that's as important as saving the forests, that's as important as saving the water, that's as important as saving our asses, like our minds. You know, save your mind, your ass will follow. Like, it's that important. Consciousness is that important, and it doesn't matter. Indigenous cultures, contemporary cultures, we all do it the same way. We all love to dance and freak out and dress up in costumes and have fires and lights and blow our Nubian, blow our mind right out and experience something different together. Dancing as a tribe, listening to music, weaving it all together in our minds till we create this, like, dome of consciousness. And that's the real work. And just because it wasn't the 60s being, or it wasn't the way you remember it being, they're doing the same work. Just a different play, a different concert, a different show. So, thank you so much. That was such a sweet letter, and I'm glad you could express those thoughts for me. For a lot of people, I'm sure.
Introduction. Now for some preaching to the choir on the subject of how come it is that the further in you go, the bigger it gets. I remember the very, very first time I smoked DMT. It was sort of a benchmark, you might say. And I remember that this friend of mine, who always got there first, visited me with this little glass pipe and this stuff which looked like orange mothballs. And since I was a graduate of Dr. Hoffman's, I figured there were no surprises. So the only question I asked was, how long does it last? And he said, about 5 minutes. So I did it. And there was something like a flower, like a chrysanthemum in orange and yellow that was sort of spinning. And then it was like I was pushed from behind, and I fell through the chrysanthemum into another place that didn't seem like a state of mind. It seemed like another place. And what was going on in this place, aside from the tastefully soffitted indirect lighting and the crawling geometric hallucinations along the domed walls, what was happening was that there were a lot of beings in there. A lot of what I call self-transforming machine elves. Sort of like jeweled basketballs, all dribbling their way toward me. And if they'd had faces, they'd have been grinning, but they didn't have faces. And they assured me that they loved me, and they told me not to be amazed, not to give way to astonishment. And so I watched them, even though I wondered if maybe I hadn't really done it this time. And what they were doing was they were making objects come into existence by singing them into existence. Objects which looked like Fabergé eggs from Mars morphing themselves with Mandaean alphabetical structures. They looked like the concrescence of linguistic intentionality put through a kind of hyperdimensional transform into three-dimensional space. And these little machines offered themselves to me, and I realized when I looked at them that if I could bring just one of these little trinkets back, nothing would ever be quite the same again. And I wondered, where am I? And what is going on? And it occurred to me that these must be holographic viral projections from an autonomous continuum that was somehow intersecting my own. And then I thought, a more elegant explanation would be to take it at face value and realize that I had broken into an ecology of souls, and that somehow I was getting a peep over the other side. Somehow I was finding out that thing that you cheerfully assume you can't find out. But it felt like I was finding out. And it felt, and then I can't remember what it felt like, because the little self-transforming types interrupted me and said, don't think about it. Don't think about who we are. Think about doing what we're doing. Do it. Do it now. Do it.
Yeah. Terrence McKenna from the space-time continuum. Just do it. So, news story here. And this is part of... it was April 20th last week. Bong Safe. Well, it was on a night when there was sun shining with better things to do. But anyway, there was a couple people who showed up to Bong Safe and they received their certificates. So keep your eyes peeled. Maybe there'll be another one. But this is a story called Drinking Bleach to Avoid Positive Drug Tests. I just mixed a few capfuls of bleach into a gallon of water, mixed it up and drank it, he said. It tasted like shit, but I passed. Who knows if the bleach actually worked or if it was all just liquid. Now, we got to do a harm reduction call on this because you don't need to drink bleach to pass a drug test. You don't know what you're going to be doing to your organs by drinking bleach. It's very, very dangerous to drink bleach. You could screw yourself up. You could kill yourself. If you need to pass a drug test, there are drinks that you can buy that will help you pass the test. And you can purchase those at a store in Nelson, or you can look in Cannabis Culture and find online companies that you can buy the drink from. But you never have to drink bleach. And Fane of the Cosmos advises against anybody drinking bleach or food grade hydrogen peroxide. Danger, danger, danger. Buy a test kit. They're $45. You drink it, you pass your test, you don't drink bleach. Okay, folks? We don't need any more harm than having to do the test itself. In the news also, Sativex, available soon in Canada. This is from Allison Murden. Just got off the phone a while ago with Lorianne Harrigan, Communications Director for Bayer. Seems we can be looking for Sativex to come to our pharmacies in late May, early June. Sativex will be available only by prescription, and as of today, only to people with neuropathic pain associated with multiple sclerosis. That'd be me. More will be announced publicly as the day draws more closely. I will be sure to give this medication a fair try, as I can't stand living like this anymore. It drives me crazy. I'm actually relieved that something on the market might help me. Been a long journey, that's for sure. Wouldn't worry so much if I had a constant, affordable, endless supply of cannabis. I just cut down my most recent grow and lost 2/3 of it. What we did, salvage, hermaphrodited on it, so everything I'm smoking is mainly seed. Been another rough week, but I'm not giving up. These problems just make me stronger every day. Just wish I could finally be more self-sufficient one day. Thanks for listening, Allison. Now, as you know, the Canadian government has done a poor job of getting the medicine to the people that need it most. The usual stumbling blocks for anything that might affect the pharmaceutical industry. Thus, the creation of Sativex by Bayer, which is a cannabis inhalant. The cannabinoids and THC, I'm not sure if it is cannabinoids, probably just THC, is administered through an inhaler with no smoke, but it is basically sprayed into the lungs like someone with asthma on an inhaler, and that delivers the THC. Now, so, like she said, she can't get the herb, she can't get the medicine for a decent price and enough to stem her daily barrage of pain and suffering. So she's hoping that maybe this will be some kind of answer. But then again, we have the pharmaceutical control of cannabis and THC. Once again, when the pharmaceutical companies have control over the method of dosing or the way you get the medicine, once they have control of that, then they can eliminate the natural plant product. That's what their goal is. By limiting the plant product and having people have to buy inhalers, the pharmaceutical companies make money. This is the delivery system for THC that is not herbal, not ecocentric, not of the earth. This is another way that pharmaceutical companies can take control. But like Allison said, she just wants to be relieved of pain. So if she can get it and they'll fund her because it is from a pharmaceutical company, then she's willing to try it. I've not tried it. I don't have that severe pain. So it'll be up to the medical users to test the product and see if it actually works. I'm still skeptical of any Bayer manipulation or pharmaceuticals, but at least that's some move in the right direction.
For the week of April 21st, 2005.
All right, police!
Bad cop.
Donut!
Bad. Cop.
No. Donut.
It's under law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for an interview with Anne-Marie Cusick, an investigative reporter with The Progressive magazine, about her recent article, The Trouble with Tasers. But first, let's have a look at what the police did to us this week. A man is dead after a confrontation with Toronto police officers. According to a City TV report, the man was pronounced dead at a nearby hospital after police were called in to deal with a man running after streetcars and yelling. No other details are available. A police officer in Toronto who was addicted to cocaine and who pleaded guilty to 2 counts of cocaine possession and 2 internal charges of discreditable conduct may be allowed to keep his job as a police officer. According to the Toronto Sun, a deal which would have allowed Rob Kelly to keep his job in exchange for a demotion and random drug and psychiatric tests was tossed out by an earlier police tribunal. Kelly appealed the decision to the Ontario Civilian Commission on Police Services. This week, one of the panelists hearing the appeal made statements critical of the Toronto Police decision to reject the deal that would have allowed Kelly to keep his job. The panel heard from one of Kelly's lawyers, who suggested that his cocaine addiction was a handicap and that the Toronto Police Department had a duty to accommodate him. A police officer in Montreal, Quebec, who is on trial this week for shoplifting, is having some difficulty explaining his actions. According to a Canadian press article, Officer Guy Marlow stole $200 worth of diapers, steaks, and Coca-Cola from a supermarket in April 2002. The officer claimed he was just trying to show the store manager how easy it was to steal from the store. According to testimony from witnesses at the time of his arrest, Marlow claimed he was acting with the full knowledge of his superiors. When he was arrested, he had already put the stolen items into the trunk of his car. Marlow was carrying a weapon at the time of the theft. His trial continues. A former Newbury, Massachusetts police officer has been found guilty of raping a young girl and has been sentenced to between 7 and 9 years in jail. A report from WCVB says that Officer Gary Clifford was found guilty by a jury on 2 counts of rape of a child and 4 counts of indecent assault and battery on a child. In addition to his jail time, he was also sentenced to parole for life, ordered to register as a sex offender, ordered into sex offender treatment, and ordered to stay away from the victim and her family. Clifford was accused of raping the girl in his home between 2001 and 2003, when his victim was between the ages of 9 and 11. Clifford has resigned from his job. He plans to appeal the lifetime parole portion of his sentence, and a hearing for that is scheduled for May 16th. A body recently unearthed in Brooklyn, New York, is believed to be that of a ninth victim of two former New York City detectives who stand accused of being hitmen for the mob. An Associated Press story this week claimed that anonymous sources have linked the body of a jeweler unearthed earlier this month to two former detectives who were arrested at their retirement homes in Las Vegas last month. The two, Louis Eppolito and Stephen Caracappa, are expected to be arraigned this week on charges including murder, drug distribution, and money laundering. The chief of police in Oldham County, Kentucky, has been accused of possessing child pornography. A report from WLKY says that Chief Steve LeClaire took his home computer to a local computer store and asked them to remove child pornography from it. The owner of the store instead took the computer to local authorities. LeClaire, who resigned from his job last Friday, is charged with possession of child pornography and official misconduct. A man who claims he was beaten up by a police officer in Davie, Florida, last September has produced a videotape this week which appears to back up his story. WPLG says that Officer Matthew Drake was off duty and out of uniform when he pulled over his victim on suspicion of drunk driving. A videotape shown at a press conference on Monday appears to show Drake beating the man and dragging his unconscious body across a driveway before arresting him for DUI and battery on a police officer. The officer claims he only used the amount of force necessary to restrain the man. A police officer in New Orleans, Louisiana, has been arrested after he sexually assaulted a woman. According to the Associated Press, Officer Corey Johnson gained access to a home by identifying himself as a police officer. Once inside the home, Johnson, who was on duty at the time, threatened the two male occupants of the home before proceeding to ask a 21-year-old female occupant for sexual favors. Johnson then allegedly sexually assaulted a 24-year-old female occupant of the home. He's been charged with one count of aggravated rape and two counts of aggravated assault. Johnson has been suspended without pay. A police officer in Eunice, Louisiana, who was accused of beating a man so severely he had to be hospitalized, will not face charges resulting from FBI and U.S. Justice Department investigations of the case. According to the Daily World, Sergeant Michael Ryan Young was accused of beating a man in October 2003. The man's lawyer asked the FBI to investigate. At one point, a Eunice police officer went on television, with his appearance and voice disguised, and accused the Eunice Police Department of a cover-up and the local police chief of protecting a favored officer. This week, the chief of the Eunice Department received a letter from the Justice Department informing him that an investigation of the incident had been closed and that there was not enough evidence to prosecute Sergeant Ryan. A sheriff's deputy in Gretna, Louisiana, has been arrested for beating his cousin and threatening her with a handgun. The Associated Press says that Deputy Victor Howard has been charged with aggravated assault and simple battery. Howard is accused of punching the woman several times in the face and on the back of her head. After relatives came to the woman's assistance and forced Howard out of the room, he raised and pointed his weapon and threatened to kill the woman. The deputy is free on bail and has resigned from his job.
Deputy Rogers was, I guess we'd say, was pretty worked up when the whole thing started. Deputy Rogers jumped to the assumption that his wife and this man were having some sort of affair.
A sheriff's deputy in Harris County, Texas, has been charged with a hate crime after he assaulted his wife and a man who he found her with. KPRC reports that Deputy Nathaniel Rogers beat his wife before assaulting her male acquaintance with his gun on March 29th. He was on duty at the time of the incident. Rogers is alleged to have made racist comments during the attack on the man. Rogers has been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and assault enhanced as a hate crime. Rogers was fired from his job within days of the incident when he failed to cooperate with investigators. He's facing up to 20 years in prison if convicted. The former chief of police in Kennedale, Texas, has been sentenced to 37 months in jail for collecting over $200,000 in payments for warrants that were never served. An Associated Press article says that Chief David Grieslin collected the money over a four-year period by falsifying records and by inventing fictitious warrants in order to hide his fraud. In January, he pleaded guilty to a charge of conspiring to commit theft. Another police employee who played a role in the deceit is up for sentencing next month. In addition to the 37 months behind bars, Griesland must also pay back almost $70,000 of the money he stole. The acting chief of police in La Villa, Texas, has been charged with impaired driving and is being investigated for an assault on a nurse who tried to give him a blood alcohol test. An Associated Press account says that Chief Alonzo Garcia drove his car off a road on Saturday and refused a breath test after witnesses to the accident reported that he smelled of alcohol. He was then taken to a hospital for a blood test where he hit the nurse who attempted to administer the test. He was arrested, charged with impaired driving, and released on bond the next day. The assault on the nurse is still under investigation. A police officer in Riverside County, California, has been charged with two counts relating to sexual misconduct at traffic stops. According to the Whittier Daily News, Officer Larry Curtis Lee was arrested on Friday and charged with attempted bribery by a public employee and sexual assault under color of authority. Lee is accused of stopping a woman on October 31st of last year and informing her that she could avoid a citation by showing him her breasts. She refused, left without a citation, and filed a complaint. During another traffic stop on January 30th, Lee allegedly sexually assaulted a woman after threatening to impound her car.
It definitely was an issue. Each question that the jury asked during the course of its deliberations had to do with one form or another of detention. The notion being that if the detention was lawful and valid, apparently they thought the force was justified.
I disagreed with a number of the instructions that the court gave, and I think they were faced with conflicting instructions on the law, in my view. So I could see where it would make it hard for the jurors to convict, given the instructions they got.
I have no comment. Thank you.
The trial of two police officers in Palo Alto, California, who were accused of illegally beating and pepper spraying a man in 2003, has resulted in a hung jury. According to the San Jose Mercury News, the officers, Michael Kahn and Craig Lee, were accused of not having reasonable cause to question or detain their victim before beating him with batons and pepper spraying him. An internal police investigation found that the two officers had broken the law in the incident, and the city settled out of court with the victim of the beating for $250,000 in exchange for the man's promise not to sue. A jury deliberated for 4 days before becoming hopelessly deadlocked. The two officers will remain on paid leave until a decision is made about whether or not to retry them.
That's a lie. They started shooting before. It comes off the sidewalk partially and stops right there. That's when you got these police that's surrounding the car on both sides. That's when they open up, started shooting.
They murdered my brother. They murdered him. Those cops who shot him, they should pay. They need to be held accountable for what they did.
Witnesses are disputing the police version of events of a Baltimore police shooting death. WBAL is reporting that three witnesses to the shooting are offering a different version of what happened. Baltimore police say that they shot a man more than 20 times after a high-speed chase when the man's car drove toward them. The three witnesses claim that the vehicle was stopped at the time of the shooting and that officers were never in any danger. All of the witnesses say that the SUV driven by the man had come to a complete stop before the officers opened fire. The FBI is investigating the shooting.
Okay, you've been listening to Bad Cop No Donut. That's a weekly radio show from Toronto. Super hot, but running out of time tonight. The Wasabi Collective is having a opening. Not an opening, God. Yes, there will be an opening in your consciousness as soon as you listen to the Wasabi Collective. That I will guarantee you. But they're going to be having an album release, CD release party on the 30th. For the life of me, because I'm getting so tired, I cannot remember where the dang thing is, but it's probably at the Fluid or David Thompson Society or one of those places downtown. Keep your eyes on the poster. It's an event not to be missed. Wasabi Collective is just coming back from a kick-ass Eastern tour, gearing up for spring, and can't miss that one. We have a copy of their CD in the studio. It's called Kato, and I think that has something. Kato means something, or they were the people who did it. I can't remember what it is, but dang. Hey, if one of you Wasabi Collective folks are listening, what the heck does Kato mean? I can't remember. But it's a new album, has 5 tracks on it, and it's kind of hard sometimes to get around the fact that it's not live. Like, when you see Wasabi a dozen times or more, you're just like, you can't picture them topping their live sound in a studio, but they've done a pretty awesome job this time around. It's always tricky, I think, working in the studio when you're a solid live band. So, yeah, glad they're in our hood. And April 30th, do not miss the CD release party. Keep your eyes on the poster. I cannot for the life of me remember because I'm too tired. I might sound like I'm baked, but really, I'm not. I'm just tired. Okay, here we go. This is a cut. This is the Wasabi Collective. We played an earlier cut earlier in the show. And, yeah. Put the tracks on the album, guys. Please, with the names and how long the songs are. Personal request. DJ. Here we go. Wasabi Collective. Radio 93.5 FM, CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson. I've been your host, Dustin Sunflower. We've had Luke Crawford in the studio tonight, Terrence McKenna, Alex Gray, Woody Allen, the Wasabi Collective. We've had a whole bunch of wild things go down. But always glad to know that people are listening, and I hope you're having a great spring. The full moon last night was mind-blowing. This is the spring to end all springs. It's going to be an awesome summer. This is the launch into summer. I love you all. Thank you so much. We have such a beautiful community here. Glad to be a part of it. Glad that we're all in it together. It's beautiful. Especially the Wasabi Collective. They're like the drum beat, the heartbeat, the soundtrack for our experience here. It's awesome. April 30th, do not miss it. Stay tuned for the Church of the Subgenius and the Night Loop. Tonight is Time Shift Cannabis Years. I've been your host, Dustin. Good night. Love you. Bye.